Longhorn Nation. He's going for the corner. He's got it. Texas is the foot kicker. The kicker comes through.
We're back. Hello again, and welcome back to another episode of Fire Tom Herman, your overreactionary Texas Longhorns football fan podcast. I am your host, Josh, and here with me for this episode is Tux to talk a little bit about that regular season finale against Texas Tech, and then dive into the really interesting stuff now that Tom Herman has finally pulled the trigger and started firing some of his assistant coaches. First off, we want to apologize that this is being recorded and posted like a week late. We had a few scheduling issues arise last week, and then we sort of started stalling, hoping that there would be more concrete stuff to talk about instead of just speculation for the coaching staff. But alas, we have lost this round of Men's a Chicken with Tom Herman. But with that, Tux, it feels like it's been years since the game against Texas Tech. How are you doing, and what do you remember most about how that game went?
Honestly, the only thing I remember about Tech is the slow start, which, you know, in hindsight, that doesn't seem so crazy, right? All week leading up to the game, we'd heard that, oh, there were going to be staff changes. Herman admitted as much in his press conference. And then it just seemed like there was no real energy left for this game. And then we start out and we're down 14-0. And it felt like, wow, the team's really going to mail this in and just hope for better coaching in the future. But no, they actually recover and it turned into a blowout. Which kind of came out of nowhere.
Yeah, I mean, from the way we started, I said it out loud sitting there in sort of that Black Friday stupor. I was like, oh my God, this game is going to be a blowout. After Tech's first two drives and we were down 14-0, I was like, holy shit, we are going to get blown out at home on Black Friday, and that's going to be like curtains. I don't think going into this game, there have been some sort of rumors that based on how the Tech game went, could have judged Tom Herman's sort of tenure as to whether or not we would have, like, boosters would have pulled the trigger on him soon. But I feel like if we had gotten blown out, I might have believed that. If it was a close loss, one of those sort of uninspiring things, I don't think the boosters are really ready to do anything, and I think anyone claiming otherwise is just sort of full of it. But yeah, it felt like we were going from, like, holy shit, this could be our sort of Kansas moment from 2016. Like, this is going to be the final blow that it takes to get rid of Tom Herman. So it didn't start well, but luckily, yeah, the team did respond. Once they got sort of the turkey that was weighing them down out of their system at halftime, it was off to the races. And we took control in a generally, I wouldn't call it dominant, but we were generally, obviously, the stronger team that second half.
Yeah, and I really like how the defense has regrouped. Like, I got to say this, the past few weeks, every game we started off slow on offense and on defense, but the defense kept finding a way to play past their mistakes and then just improve every single quarter that they've played. Now, obviously, this didn't end up saving Todd Orlando, but I'm hoping that that provides enough of a bright spot going into the future that we can say, oh, look, the defense is going to be good, and that we can also hopefully point to whoever the next defensive coordinator is and say, hey, look, you have a ton of talent to work with. If you want to use the Texas DC job to get a P5 job, you can definitely do that.
Yeah, and we had great showings from some guys that were really unexpected. I think most of all, Kenyatta Watson really sort of showed up pretty big in this game. I don't think really anyone was expecting him to play much, if at all. Obviously, with Jalen Green being out for the first half, was that this week? I don't know. Dude, it's been so long. But Kenyatta Watson played and actually had some pretty good plays. Had, I believe, one pass breakup in the end zone. But I think did a really good job in general shutting down his side of the field when he was on the field. So it was sort of last year what we saw was for senior day, we saw sort of Charles Omenihue was sort of making his impact known and seemed to be almost passing the torch to Joseph Osai, who had a big game against Iowa State. And while this doesn't have the same overlap and not even on the same side of the ball, we had Devin Duvernay have a big game and Kenyatta Watson sort of show up for the first time. So I'm hoping to see that be this year's version of the sort of passing of the torch from the senior class to this brand new class, these freshmen, who we're expecting to be the base of this team moving forward.
Speaking of the future, I'm hoping that Roschon Johnson reconsiders moving back to quarterback. I think he's just been fantastic as a backup running back. I mean, he's racked up, what, 600 yards rushing, 6 or 7 touchdowns. He might actually just become a good running back option in the future.
Yeah, it'd be nice to see him stick there. I think it really comes down to how Jordan Whittington comes back from his injury, what happens with a guy like Jake Smith, where there are the rumors of homesickness and looking to possibly transfer. If he sticks around and Whittington sticks at running back, then I think you start having that conversation, especially with Bijan Robinson, assuming he stays part of the 2020 class. You start having that conversation with Roschon about moving back to quarterback. But if a guy like Bijan, if he ends up not sticking in the class, or if Jake Smith moves on, transfers out, and we move Whittington into the slot there, that sort of changes that depth there. So it'll be definitely something to keep an eye on through this offseason, sort of those dynamics and sort of the domino effect of guys moving, guys committing and decommitting. It'll be interesting, but yeah, I agree. I thought Roschon Johnson went above and beyond. He didn't play good running back for a quarterback who was just learning the position. He just played downright good running back. He just ran hard, ran tough, and I mean, he just played well.
Yeah, and he's starting to pick up on stuff like blitz blocking, pass catching. He could become a legitimately good option. And one other guy that you missed, I think, is if somehow Casey Thompson decides he wants to transfer, that may force Roschon to quarterback more than anything else, you know?
Yeah, especially with Jaquindon Jackson and Hudson Card coming in the 2020 class again. If Casey Thompson leaves, you're going to want a guy who's got some familiarity with the system. You don't want it to be two guys that the intent is to redshirt for completely different reasons. Jaquindon Jackson to get his throwing mechanics down, Hudson Card to really just build his frame and get him ready and sort of ease him in rather than throw him to the wolves if something, God forbid, happens to Sam next year. But yeah, if Casey Thompson moves on, that's definitely another one that could have that impact. So we'll see what happens. It'll be something to keep an eye on.
All right, so with that, you want to get to the main attraction here, the coaching firings and then the potential hirings?
Oh yeah, so for those of you who have been living under a rock, the type of people who listen to podcasts probably already know this. But after that Texas Tech game, I think it was Sunday, which was like extremely frustrating for a lot of Texas fans who were wanting the trigger to be pulled immediately, we finally started firing and demoting assistant coaches. Todd Orlando, the defensive coordinator, is completely gone, which I think was a surprise given that he was one of the only two who still had time on his contract. After switching last year, most of the assistants got switched over to one-year deals and would just be renewed each year. He still had another year. He was technically contracted through 2020, so it was a little surprising that we moved on him quickly. Tim Beck was not fired, but he was demoted. He is no longer the offensive coordinator. He is simply the QB coach, at least through the bowl game. Corby Meekins, the inside wide receiver coach, he was demoted. He is now going to be more of a analyst role with Texas. He's not completely gone. I think there are some positives just because he is a former high school coach in the state of Texas. I think keeping him in some capacity, even if he's not an active staff member, makes a lot of sense. And then really the biggest one was Drew Maringer, who has been a headache for a lot of Texas fans, has been underperforming basically since he got here, and has been the cause of so many issues in our wide receiver room that should be so much better than the product we've seen on the field. He is finally gone. Not demoted, but fully airlocked. Unfortunately, my favorite target to beat up on, Derek Wareheim, has survived this first culling of the Tom Herman staff at Texas.
I know that all Sunday you were just like waiting, like, oh, when is it? When's it going to happen? When's it going to happen? And it's kind of funny that you didn't get that chance to enjoy that moment.
Yeah, it was F5 season for me, but it wasn't because I was looking for Beck to be gone. Wasn't because I was looking for Orlando. It was I needed it to be Derek Wareheim. And I guess really the people who benefited the most, or who benefited the most from us not committing to what we said we were going to do on the sub earlier, is everyone on the subreddit who hated BrewBot, because we would have been building up to this moment where they're going to go, finally, we're getting rid of Brubot, and he'd still be sticking around if there wasn't the minor mutiny that we had to get rid of that on the subreddit.
I think that in the future, though, more than likely, Beck and Meekins are just demoted, but I wouldn't be surprised if they move on as well. And then Wareheim, he may just stay through the bowl game as well, because his contract runs out after this year. And whoever the new offensive coordinator is, they may want their own guy. It seems like the only people who are safe on this staff are probably Nivar, Giles, and Hand. But depending on who the new offensive coordinator and defensive coordinator is, even those guys may not end up safe.
Yeah, I mean, there's still a ton of turnover to go through here. I'm pretty sure there are still moves to be made on this staff, and it's been rumored and talked about by the 995ers for a while, was that this was going to come in two waves. It was going to be the immediate fallout after the season, and then there was going to be after the bowl game, because we are going to a bowl game, despite how this season feels like it's gone. We are still playing for a bowl game, so we could not just eliminate the entire coaching staff and try and throw together two coordinators and all of their position staff and try and slap together something in 15 days worth of practices for a bowl game. We did have to keep some semblance of our staff intact, which is why a guy like Meekins got demoted to an off-the-field analyst role, which means in practice he's going to be able to still help, but he's going to be not the guy on the road recruiting. We've got Brian Carrington and a couple other guys have stepped in from analyst roles or from recruiting roles to be the official on-field coaches. But that was really what limited us from being able to fire more people. Derek Wareheim might be holding on just because we don't have another analyst who's ready to slide right into his role and recruit for us. So it'll be interesting again after the bowl game. Regardless of what happens, there's going to be more changes. It's just a matter of who it's going to be, when it's going to happen, and then obviously the replacements are going to be what everyone's really waiting with bated breath on.
Yeah, exactly. Before we get into the coaches, there's one point I want to bring up. How often is it that you've heard about a coach cleaning house like this? I mean, Saban does this all the time, so that's obviously like an exception, but this doesn't... Yes, it reeks a little bit of desperation, but I'm hoping that this is also Tom Herman's like come to Jesus moment, that his original staff did not work, is not good enough to win the Big 12, and now he's going to have to go find a staff that can do that.
Yeah, and I think a lot of Texas fans felt like they knew that this staff wasn't good enough. There was a lot of complaints. Like one of the big criticisms for Charlie Strong on his way out the door was that he brought over so much of his Louisville staff when he left. And a lot of people were looking forward to Tom Herman, especially because Tom Herman's tenure started off with so many rumors about, oh, we were going to get Tim Brewster back in Austin. And all these rumors about these big names that were going to follow. And we might get Dave Aranda to come back from LSU, names that were floated. And then in the end, he ended up being as bad an offender as Charlie Strong was, of just bringing over guys that he was familiar with from previous stops. So a lot of people were upset, and it is kind of funny now looking back. I remember I said it, that the real prize of hiring Herman was getting Todd Orlando, and he was the first guy to get announced to actually get fired from this staff. He is the first guy that Tom Herman has actually fired since he became a head coach, not just at Texas, but at Houston as well.
Yeah, I did not see it ending that way, but just there was no progress being made on the defense, and that had to be done, though.
Yeah, you were able to make a few changes to sort of stop the bleeding there late in the season, but it never really felt like it was because the team got better. It was just because the play calling was less stupid. You didn't develop any guys. You just sort of did enough to, or at least tried to prevent yourself from making things worse by running guys out of position on several plays.
Exactly, yeah. So that's kind of interesting to me, because we know that the reason Todd Orlando was targeted by Tom Herman was that, A, Todd Orlando ran a three-man front, and the other thing was, Tom Herman wanted someone who was aggressive and very versatile in his defense. You know, Orlando, for all his faults, he gave offenses a lot of multiple looks. And before he became predictable due to injuries, due to lack of veterans, whatever you want to call it, he was very good at switching things up. Now, obviously, this also confused our own players half the time, but that is something that he brought. That was a trait that Tom Herman liked. And I don't know if Herman's going to look for that again, or is he going to go for someone who's less or a little more risk averse than Todd Orlando, or just get another guy and hope that that guy is as risky as Todd Orlando but makes it work? You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's going to be less of an issue about, yeah, being risk averse and what his level of aggression is. But I feel like there's going to be a lot of time spent on focusing on the fundamentals, because there were a lot of things, like for all the problems that were there with the Orlando defense, a lot of it could have worked out simply with better fundamentals. You had, with that three-man front, we had guys struggle to set the edge. We had cornerbacks who would be in good position and just failed to make a play on the ball. It's going to be, I feel like, regardless of what happens, the focus is going to be on finding someone who really preaches good fundamentals, because there's a lot of that, and it gets brought up a lot, that with the athletes that we are able to attract, there's no reason for us to overcomplicate things. To a certain degree, we should be able to sit back and play generally base defense and let our athletes just out-athlete the guys on the other side.
Yeah, for sure. But again, Tom Herman wanted someone who could potentially provide a schematic advantage. So would you be okay with someone who just plays it safe, you know, just runs a one base defense and then make sure that we run that very well?
Yeah, I mean, I'd be okay with that. I mean, I guess it sort of depends on what that base defense is. Like, I don't want some idiot who's going to be like, oh, we're going to run the 4-3 against all these spread offenses. But whether it's four-man front, three-man front, I think is completely irrelevant. That's been a hot topic for a lot of Texas fans. I think sort of blaming a symptom rather than a core problem is like they just don't trust Todd Orlando. So anything associated even vaguely with Todd Orlando, a lot of Texas fans just have a lot of vitriol for. So I don't think our problems were at all inherently because we ran a three-man front. It's how we executed that three-man front, whether it's lining up your defensive ends in the 4-eye technique rather than the outside shoulder and getting the pass rush from the outside. Something that we did change a little bit in that second half against Texas Tech, and suddenly we were able to generate a more consistent pass rush. It's things like that where you can still use that three-man front, or it can be a four-man front. Honestly, I don't care which one it ends up being, but I think it's, as long as it's someone who's willing to sort of commit to at least doing one thing well, rather than Todd Orlando, who is just throwing so many things at the offense that you're just hoping something from the defense worked, rather than sticking to what your defense knows it can do well, I think would be very beneficial, especially with the amount of youth that we have that'll be really in their second year of playing significant minutes. I think anyone who can simplify for this defense will be a good thing.
See, I'm looking around at the candidates, and I know a guy who runs one defense. It's his base, and he runs it really well. He prefers a four-man front, and he's a good teacher, apparently. So it just sounds like you really want Chris Ash, or you'd be okay with Chris Ash.
I mean, I wouldn't hate Chris Ash, and I think my biggest issues probably just come down to I'm wanting a flashy name. But at this point, I really don't know who that flashy name would be as a defensive coordinator. I mean, you're not going to pull a Dave Aranda, especially as he's looking around to being a head coach, possibly at Colorado State, looking, as of recording, more like it'd be UNLV, and possibly by the time we actually push this out, he might be hired at one of those schools. I don't think there's a big flashy name out there. I think the flashiest names, like Aranda, like Kevin Steele, or if you wanted to get crazy, go up into Big Ten country and go after Jim Leonard up at Wisconsin, I don't think those guys are really achievable. So when you're looking at the rest of the tiers of what's available, my only aversion to Chris Ash is it just doesn't feel flashy, even though consciously I know that flashy is really not an option for us at this point.
Yeah. I was trying to bait you into this Chris Ash conversation just because...
Chris Ash, yes.
It was hard to say, okay? I was trying not to say it. I think he'd be an okay candidate. For those who don't know, he worked with Herman previously at Ohio State, but everywhere that he's been at outside of Ohio State, his defenses have just been ass. So part of the problem is we don't know what he would be like against Big 12 offenses, and the other part is it feels like there's this perception problem that Herman has that he hired his friends, and now he's having to pay the price for it. So if he hires another friend, yeah, the fan base may just revolt against him.
Yeah, so, that's really the biggest knock, I think.
Yeah, so that's why I was just thinking, like, in a vacuum, Chris Ash. I said Ash, okay? I can't not think about that now.
Now you're just reading it every time you, like, read over his name. You're thinking, don't say ass, don't say ass, don't say ass. Chris Ass, damn it.
Exactly. So I feel like in a vacuum, Chris Ash would be a great choice, but considering the perception around this program and Tom Herman, it would probably be for the best if Tom Herman didn't hire Chris. So outside of that, the most splashy name I can think of is maybe a guy like Barry Odom, who's recently fired from Missouri, but that would just be hilarious considering all the shit talk between our team and their team before the Texas Bowl in 2017.
Yeah, it would also be especially funny if you're a guy like Jordan Elliott, who transferred from Texas to Mizzou, and now we just took your former head coach to be our defensive coordinator. So I think there'd be a lot of levels to it. I'm not sure. Barry Odom's another one where it's sort of like, well, I mean, I guess overall that's not bad, but I don't know that I'm, like, super excited by it. But like I said, all the names that excite me are guys that are completely, like, unrealistic.
Yeah, basically. I would just add a couple more unrealistic names, and those are John Heacock from Iowa State and Phil Snow from Baylor. Those guys have been with their head coach for nearly a decade or more. They aren't leaving for Texas, especially not with those places already paying them great money. They already have the stability. Texas can't offer anything except for more money.
Yeah, I think Heacock would be nice if there was any way to wrench him away from Iowa State. I think he would be really the best hire because Iowa State had shown, without being insanely aggressive, that they can slow down and beat these high-powered offenses in the Big 12. They have the scheme, they have the understanding of how to do that, and I think, because I believe it's also a three-man front at Iowa State.
Yes.
We have personnel that would be familiar with the concepts that he would be introducing. There would just be more of that focus on fundamentals and mentally tough defense that has really defined ultimately all of Matt Campbell's tenure at Iowa State.
Yeah, basically. And once again, I don't really care between three-man front, four-man front, but I do want us to put our best players in a position to play. And sometimes it's going to be a four-man front. Sometimes it's going to be a three-man front. Sometimes that may be a three-man front with Joseph Osai moving all around the line and blitzing from different spots. So, you know, this thing, it just depends. But part of me also says that Texas could get whoever a defensive coordinator, and it might just work out due to the sheer returning talent we have for next year. Like, yes, this team and this defense is not highly ranked right now, but you saw enough where you're like, hey, those freshmen and sophomores, they're going to be sophomores and juniors, and then, you know, juniors and seniors the year after that. You know, this is a team that's going to get improve and improve rapidly. So I think that may be something to keep an eye on, that even if we do have a defensive coordinator who has an amazing first year, we may have to keep that in mind, that hey, this guy's a lot to work with. So outside of that on defense, it would also be interesting to see how the staff and the rest of the assistant staffs fills out. But I think offense is the one where there have been more developments, and then at the same time there haven't been any at all.
Right. It came out pretty early on, almost immediately after Tim Beck was demoted. I mean, Chip Brown had sort of been pushing this, but it's sort of one of those, okay, Chip Brown said it, so 99% of that is just bullshit or malicious. Anwar Richardson, who is, for anyone who doesn't know, really kind of Tom Herman's mouthpiece. If Tom Herman wants something out there, it's going through Anwar. So chances are most of this message came directly from Tom Herman. But Anwar came out and said that passing game coordinator and wide receiver coach at LSU, Joe Brady, who just won the Broyles Award tonight as the nation's top assistant, the guy who revolutionized LSU's offense and brought them from the 1940s all the way into 2019 in the matter of like one off season, that he was going to be the top target. And our second target was going to be Graham Harrell, the quarterback most infamously known for that game that shall not be named in 2008. But he's also the offensive coordinator at USC, where they had one of the best passing offenses in the entire country, despite the fact that they were starting three-star freshman third stringer Keaton Slovis the majority of the season because of an injury to JT Daniels. He was able to take a guy who basically really shouldn't have been playing yet in Keaton Slovis and made it so that their passing game didn't miss a beat.
And in fact got better as the year wore on.
Which is what you're looking for out of any quarterback. You're looking for that growth. You want to see the offense improve, see your quarterback gain confidence through the year. And that's exactly what we saw out of Slovis. So he's going to be that air raid type. He also, before USC, was at North Texas and really turned Mason Fine into a good quarterback. And we saw this year, Mason Fine really regressed without Graham Harrell's tutelage to help him out. So it'll be interesting to see if that does come home to Texas, basically. Even though Harrell went to Texas Tech, he is a Texas boy, so getting him back home would be interesting. He's familiar with the state. He runs that air raid, and it would be really interesting to see how that works out with a guy like Sam Ehlinger, with that dual threat thing going on, because so far, Graham Harrell's offenses to this point have been pro-style quarterbacks. So it would be really interesting to see that wrinkle there, but the longer this takes, the more it becomes confusing as to whether or not he is going to leave USC. I mean, we're offering somewhere in the neighborhood, it has been widely reported to this point, of like $2 million. And we're still sort of in this will he, won't he situation.
I don't know. This may end up with some egg on Tom Herman's face. If you're offering to more than double someone's salary to come back to their home state to coach, and if they still don't take it, I think you got to admit that there's something wrong here that we don't know about. But in reality, Harrell may just prefer coaching under Clay Helton at USC and think that, hey, if he just sticks it out another year with a veteran Keaton Slovis at that point, he can get something better, like a head coaching job. And that may work out fine. But at this point in time, it seems like he's just waiting to figure out what his options are with regarding to some other West Coast head coaching openings, like Fresno State. So we'll probably just be waiting for him to get his ducks in a row before he decides anything. And the fact that we haven't seen any sort of declaration from Texas or USC about Harrell's future really says a lot about the fact that Harrell has not made any sort of decision yet. And it's been dragging out for more than a week now. And it may just stay in this limbo for a while.
Well, now that we're recording this now on Tuesday, we'll probably get this episode out Thursday. So in that 2-day time period, just based on our luck with sort of reporting on speculation, we'll probably end up going from speculating, and by the time you guys are listening to this, we'll already have an OC hired, whether that's Brady, whether that's Harrell, or whether that's someone else that we haven't really thought of yet. Now that we've spent all this time speculating, chances are we're going to make a hire in the next 2 days, and you'll all be just sort of laughing at our dumb takes that we've got right now.
Yeah, basically.
And then really from there, I'm operating under the assumption that it's going to be Harrell. I think it's just really sort of the paperwork and negotiating and sort of back and forth trying to get leverage in a contract negotiation. But I'm hopeful that if we do get Harrell, that we're able to go up to Kansas and take Emmett Jones, the current wide receiver coach up there, because that would be a great benefit for our recruiting in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. He was a rainmaker at Texas Tech. He was basically the guy who built that insane wide receiver core that they had for years with Kingsbury, where you just had it. It didn't matter what type of receiver it was. It was Jason Morrow kind of playing tight end there, Kiki Kuti there. Who was it this year? The tall ones.
Ezukama. And then
Ezukama, Vasher. I mean, you had Vasher, TJ Vasher. You had all these guys who were like different styles of receiver, and yet they're all thriving and in not only the air raid, but under Emmett Jones. So I feel like he would be a great hire, a guy who's going to be familiar with those air raid concepts that Graham Harrell's offense is built on. So I think that would be a great hire, and it would sort of eliminate our sort of waiting game that we're playing with David Beatty, where we're waiting for his lawsuit with Kansas to be over so we can hire him. But if we were able to get a guy like Emmett Jones, we no longer need David Beatty to be part of the program.
Pretty much, yeah. And, you know, just kind of projecting, if you had a staff of Harrell and then Herb Hand as at offensive line, Stan Drayton at running back, and then a guy like Emmett Jones plus one more recruiter type at tight end, like maybe even Tim Beck if he wants to work there, that would be a pretty good offensive staff.
Yep, and it would also help us move a guy, as we've been clamoring for basically since year one, to rebalance the staff, get some support back over the defensive side of the ball, get that defensive coordinator another spot to sort of help him install whatever defense he's installing. It opens up a lot of freedom, and you have, again, yeah, a lot of rainmakers. Guys like Stan Drayton are supposed to be good on the trail. He's got Bijan Robinson, at least for the moment. Emmett Jones, we just talked about, being a big recruiter in DFW. Tim Beck has shown his value as a recruiter in Texas, in Arizona especially. So, I mean, that really, on that side of the ball, especially when you've got a guy like Graham Harrell showing off the air raid, which is so prevalent in Texas high school football now that those concepts are so familiar, you've got yourself a legitimately very good recruiting staff, and we'd be finally running the system that has basically defined Texas high school football for the last 10 years or so.
And I think that kind of wraps up the coaching developments so far. Outside of that, the next biggest development that's happened with Texas football is that we will be playing Utah in the Alamo Bowl. Utah just got smacked around by Oregon in their Pac-12 conference championship game, and now they get to face a much lower ranked Texas team. This kind of sounds all familiar to the last 2 years, if I'm being honest.
Yeah, we're facing a team that seems like just doesn't, supposedly, won't have a lot of interest. But it'll be really interesting to see just how this goes, I guess. If we had our staff intact, if we had waited until after the bowl game, I'd feel pretty confident. Just because you start looking at the holes in Utah's game. Basically, their offense has been run through Zach Moss, their running back. He's a guy that you would expect would sit out of a game like this. They went 11-2, their two losses being to USC and to Oregon in the Pac-12 title game. But those 11 wins came all against teams that had 7 or fewer wins on the season. So it's a big question. The good teams that they played in USC and Oregon were the only two teams on their schedule that had more than 8 wins. And again, everyone else had 7 or fewer. So there's a lot of question marks about how good Utah really is. They went from, if they won that Pac-12 title game, a decent shot of making it to the college football playoff instead of OU sucks. There's a lot of question marks there. You have all those seniors who you would expect would sit out, given that the Alamo Bowl is admittedly not that important of a game. It's not like last season where you had Georgia's seniors sit out of the Sugar Bowl, which is still a legitimately big game. It's a New Year's Six game. But with us missing half the staff, it's going to be like, who's going to get the best addition by subtraction here? Utah, with them feeling dejected about being so close to a college football playoff and falling short, and a team that you don't really know how good they are because the only two good teams they've played beat them and have otherwise smothered every other bad team that they played this year. And then you have all their seniors sitting out. But you have us with half a coaching staff, effectively, and who knows what the hell we're going to get out of that.
Yeah, and it's worth remembering that last year, Utah got smacked around in their Pac-12 championship game, and then they just laid an egg in the bowl game. So that may just be a thing that happens again.
Yeah, it could just be a Utah thing. Could be a Kyle Whittingham thing. It could be a Morgan Scally thing, who was rumored to be in the mix for our defensive coordinator position. And I guess there's still 995ers out there pushing it that is not completely off the table, even though I will tell you, based on absolutely nothing but common sense, that it's not on the table. But yeah, I mean, it'll be interesting to see what happens. I have it here on our Google Doc to talk about expectations, but I think the biggest expectation is that we have no clue what's going to happen. Anything that happens will not be a surprise, I think. Us getting blown out, us coming out and looking like the team that has played our last two bowl games and just dominating the majority of the game, and everything in between, there's just so many question marks on either side that you just go, who knows, that anything could happen in this game.
Yeah, I couldn't have said any better myself.
Well, that brings us to the end of this episode, I think. You got anything else, Tux?
No, I think that's about it. I just want to give you guys a shout out that thank you for keeping up with us all of this year. We've really increased our listenership, and you know, we're happy that you guys genuinely like us and support us by listening to us.
Yeah, other than the few people who said negative things, but as usual, if you do have negative comments, send them all to Will Baser. I don't care. But really, seriously, thanks for listening. We appreciate all the support we've gotten being on Hornscast, not being on our own, despite the fact that this year didn't go nearly as well as we were hoping to start the year, and despite the fact that a lot of you who have sort of started following us on places like Twitter are doing it unironically, which was, to be clear, this was never supposed to be a serious title for our podcast. It was always supposed to be sarcastic and overreactionary to call for Tom Herman's head. Lately, there have been a lot of people following us who are calling for Tom Herman's head legitimately. But with all that, we do still have hope. We're still hoping things can get turned around for Tom Herman. So, but yeah, all those problems aside, thank you for all the support. Thanks for listening to this ridiculously late episode of our podcast. But make sure you do follow us on Twitter as the offseason approaches at the FTH podcast. Last offseason, we did a countdown of the top 25 plays of 2018. We might do that again this year. That was kind of a surprisingly large amount of work to go through entire games and figure out what our best plays were. But we'll come up with an offseason project, I'm sure, to sort of engage the community while there's no games being played. But we'll be back after the Alamo Bowl to talk about the shit show that comes out of that, whatever that's going to look like. And, I mean, if something big enough happens, if we do drop a bomb and it happens to be Joe Brady as our offensive coordinator before the bowl game, maybe we'll sort of jump on and talk about that and react to it. I'm not counting on it, though. So at the absolute worst, we will see you after the holidays. So have a good holiday season. Whatever you celebrate, enjoy your time with family, be safe, hopefully enjoy this bowl game, and we will see y'all in 2020. Hook 'em.
Hook 'em.